This is, of course, Dialogue Conspiracy. I'm Phil Kogan, and as is every week, May Brussel is in the studio. Good afternoon, May.
Hi, Phil.
I caught you in the middle of reading The Realist, which is going to make up a good portion of Dialogue Conspiracy today for a good reason. May Brussel wrote most of it.
Well,
the whole back of the magazine is Mae Brussel's writing. That's the August 72 issue of The Realist.
I'm sitting here reading and I can't do the show. I'm looking to see. I thought Paul left out part of a... the way I wrote one of the articles, he turned it around and put the beginning as the conclusion. And I'm looking here and I thought, oh, why did he do that? You know, He didn't change much of the articles. As a publisher, he wasn't going to change any. But he twisted one of the articles around and put the conclusion as the...
Which article is that?
So. Well, we'll go into this. We're going to talk about The Realist today. That's the magazine I've been talking about. On Dialogue Assassination and Dialogue Conspiracy, we talk about the methods by which the government is controlled or overthrown. And Paul Krasner, editor of Realist, is going to put out a newspaper. He'll publish it and I'll write it, coming out every 2 weeks, called Conspiracy Newsletter, giving facts and information. It all... came because of this show, Phil, because giving out all these facts, people want to know the sources of information or where I got my material. And there's a lot of feedback. People write, what books can I read? Where can I get information? And so after that long show in New York City on WBAI and in being here every week and the response to this kind of show, Paul thought people should have access to this information across the country.
In fact, the program got mentioned in The Realist on page 4.
Yes.
I note, I underlined in orange ink.
Okay, did you underline it already? It mentions this particular station, KLRB, and what are his exact words? It's far out radio station, KLRB in Carmel, an hour a week of dandy documentation. In the back of the articles, there's one article on how Nixon came to power and an example of documentation. There's 42 footnotes, 41 and 2 inside the article, on just 2.5 columns. So if you want to do your homework now, you can do it. As a matter of fact, we were up at Lennon's, John and Yoko Lennon's yesterday, and we were having a long conversation about their problems. And they have problems in this country, as many of you know, and we'll talk about them in a minute. And as we were talking, I was mentioning a book, and John said to the fellow who works for them and who's with them, Peter, take that down and get it. It was Richard Nixon's My Six Crises. And I was talking about the funding of Richard Nixon. I was pertaining to that book. But there comes a point in your life, and it's a question of survival. It's a question of your survival or mine or John Lennon's, and you need facts or information, and you have to read, and you have to stop. At some point, even playing music or listening music, that doesn't mean you give it all up, but you have to, at some time, be very serious and begin to get information or documentation about what's happening. You can't just sit in a drawing room and say, isn't this like 1984? If you think 72 is 84, read some books and find out how it became that way so you can halt the progress. See, it seems that 1984 is a very dangerous book for one reason, Phil, and I was talking about that last night with my son Marvin. By saying in 1984 these things will be here, people accept that as the deadline and think now is good. You follow what I'm saying? It becomes a dangerous concept because people say, oh, wow, they have these cameras where they can go across the street and photograph everyone in my house or everything I'm doing. Isn't that bad? And people say, well, that's almost like 1984, where they'll do the whole block. But because it's just your house or that house, it's only 72, and 72 is good.
Sure,
really
we got
lucky.
12 good years left.
Yeah, that's what I mean. You see the concept of accepting the data or information that's happening, like the new NASA Telestar that they can get the fish pools and the forests and photograph the Earth surfaces that went up this week. That was planned years ago by the same German rocket scientists, you know, that Hitler had developing in Germany, that were nurtured and brought up in this country. They can know where the fish pools are, where the forests are, where the water is. They control it, and they can tell the boats where to go or what countries to negotiate or where the fishing boat should go. You say, well, you're controlling all the food of the earth that way. If you control the source of the water and the forest and the fish, you know, and the animal life, you control the man then, because you control his stomach. And that stomach makes the energy work, the factories work, the man works. And if you don't feed him, you know, if you hold off his food, he dies. Therefore, he has to work. He has to go into the mines or the coal fields or cut the trees. You control his food, you control his stomach, then you control the machinery that goes around, that makes the country work, that makes it possible for the arms to be manufactured, or the wars to be waged. And it's a vicious circle, and as long as those things are up, and it's only, they've got the things working now to keep track of all the animal life or vegetation. Well, this is 72. Aren't we lucky? You know, they're not doing anything with it yet.
Let's go back to the realist that
okay.
we mentioned. First of all, for people who aren't familiar with it, where can they get it once it's out on the... we have our unbound advanced copies of the August 72 issue.
Well, we have a little local problem here. The Realist has always been by subscription. The address is here. To subscribe to the Realist magazine is Realist Department 93. And then Paul has an address in the magazine that's different than the one we had before. Box 379, Stuyvesant Station, Stuyvesant Station. New York 10009. I'll leave a copy here at the station if somebody wants to call and get that address. I'm hoping, you know, that the Thunderbird will carry some special issues of this because of the local interest. And this story, particularly the Martha Mitchell story, but the others will be breaking in the news, hopefully, and we will be meeting, you know, a lot of news people, particularly on the Martha Mitchell, John Mitchell story. And there'll be interest in this. I hope there better be, because it's, you know, the Mitchell story is a really important story. And I hope Thunderbird or local bookstores maybe. The Odyssey said they would carry them. I'll have to get in touch with them. You know, Paul will have to do that to see where people can pick it up. But that's not my problem. I wrote it, and he distributes it for New York, and that's all I know.
Okay. Now, into the article itself, it might be interesting. I don't know how important it is, how you got to know Paul. Maybe you went into this when he was on the show a couple
of
weeks back.
No, we didn't. I met him when I was reading The Realist the first of the year, and he was made a comment that in one of his issues he was sued by the Scientologists because he was going to write a story how Sirhan was working his way up in Scientology. So the Scientologists sued him. A large $1 million, something more than that, suit for slamming their name, you know, slandering their name. So I was going to call New York. I looked up the address where the subscription came from to offer my information on Sirhan and the fact that the Scientologist was a cover for the real assassins that really did it, just like the so-called communist Fair Play for Cuba was a cover for Oswald. He actually was Navy intelligence, and Fair Play for Cuba gets slandered, and Civil Liberties Union gets slandered, and he wasn't even into those things, you see. But they send him before his assignment, before the role that he played in the killing of Kennedy. They had him just 2 weeks before go to a meeting of the American Civil Liberties Union. And then, when they say, well, who's this assassin? They say, oh, he joined the Civil Liberties Union last month.
So that's... So
I called New York, and I saw on the subscription thing that there was an address in San Francisco on Vallejo Street, and I called there, and there's a recording, and then the phone went down here where Paul lives in Watsonville, and then I reached him there, which was close to home. It was much easier than New York. And after we talked about Sirhan, he said, well, what do you know about Charlie Manson? He's doing a story on the parts left out of the Manson book. Paul's famous for these things that he puts in The Realist. He takes these books and puts what should have been there, what they left out, you know, like the parts left out of the Manchester book. So he's doing one on the Manson. I said, well, I know as much as anyone in the country about the real intent and plan in using Charlie Manson and the purposes of coming down on the hippies, that it was a framed massacre. It was not a thing where one man went berserk and trained a bunch of chicks. You know, Charlie didn't even kill anybody. So Paul came down, and we spent a couple of days just going over a lot of material because he's into the mainstream of everything that happens in this country. But they were linked coincidences to him, and he didn't take them as conspiracy. As a matter of fact, in the conspiracy newsletter, he wrote a word that I changed his whole opinion about what was happening in America to a what he said. He said, May is truth-seeking in her discipline. Knowing her, I've undergone a religious conversion from believing in coincidence to believing in conspiracy. It's interesting that he calls it a religious conversion, because a lot of people may think that's funny or they take it lightly. But when you're laughing all your life and you're the jester or the funny man and you're one of the greatest satirists in the country, you know, and you see the double side of everything, the serious and the funny, and you can say it, you know, and laugh at it. And when you begin to see it as a very serious thing and what it really is, it's a very hard thing to admit and to go through that change. This is why I have trouble with most people listening to why there were political conspiracies in this country, because they're not willing to go through the metamorphosis that Krasner's going through, the pain or the prolonging of what you're doing, stalling off your work, laughing, happy-go-lucky, you know, clowning around, being with a lot of people, and isn't this jolly kind of thing. Paul has given that up into a much more serious vein and accepted some of the things that I have said as being possible and looking into them himself as being true. And ask yourself, does it hurt? Yes, it hurts a lot. It hurts very much, you know, to find out what's happening. But a really, that's what makes Paul Krasner Krasner, and makes John Lennon Lennon, or makes people really come above the ordinary person who refuses to open his mind. We all have the same potential to do it, but the person who refuses to do it stays at a certain level, and the other person goes through the glory and the pain, which is what a religious conversion is. It has its glory and its pain. Yesterday we spent the day with John and Yoko Lennon and Paul, and I took my kids up because we've been Beatle fans for years, ever since their first album. You know, I took the kids to Candlestick Park to see them up in San Francisco years ago. This is a lot easier to just go upstairs and, you know, sit around on the floor and have lunch and spend the whole day and just rap. But what's happened in the years since we were Beatle fans? Oh, I guess when we go to Candlestick, it was around 66. And what's happened in the interim of 66 to 72? Of course, you're so young, Phil, you know, like I look at this back of the panorama, historic panorama, you know, and there were the Beatles at the height of their career, but then they were almost killed because the publicity that he was as important as Jesus, or the remarks that went around, they'll remember him as long as Jesus, you know, made a lot of religious people ready to kill him. And at that point, their life was in danger, physical danger, you know, from people who didn't like the comparison. And furthermore, we're afraid of what they were doing. So we spent a whole day, and a change happened. You know, this wasn't the happy-go-lucky John that was flipping around years ago, you know, having a hell of a ball and free from all of society's entrapments, and he could wear his hair how he wanted, and he could sing how he wanted, and live with who he wanted, and live it up to the hilt with the fancy Rolls Royce and the 70-room mansion, and have a ball in his own recording studio, and life was a ball. And he was a clown, sort of like Krasner was a clown. They were just gay. They were having fun. It was a gaiety about the whole damn thing. And meanwhile, the world was falling apart. And
now it's, things are a little more serious.
Well, they're serious because, you know what, we were trying to rap about up there. And this is a very loose show. Just trying to think of the things that happened and share them with the people that are listening, is that what he didn't understand, John Lennon, was that he was a social phenomena or a force, and he knew he was. The Beatles were a force. Bob Dylan was a force. But Bob Dylan's a prisoner, too, of the CIA. He's in a compound. He's in a wall. Like, John's a prisoner. And you can't believe that, but he is. Because while he was laughing and kicking and freeing people, freeing the young people to think for themselves and to sing and to relate and to communicate, the boss didn't like it. Boss man isn't having that fun, and Tricia and Julie aren't having that fun, and he doesn't want America thinking for themselves. The education that they had supposed to get wasn't supposed to work that way, so the kids dropped out. You were supposed to stay in college and be part of the corporation, or get your job and be glad you worked for Bank of America, you know, and say, thank you, sir. But the kids saw that something was wrong, and they dropped out, and the Beatles were singing in the FM stations, the AM, and the underground press were telling some truths, and the boss man doesn't like that, and he gets mad. And so what I was trying to say to the Lennons is, you know, like, they're a social force, and they are meeting Nixon and Mitchell head on. And the Kissinger, they say, get out of our country. We don't want you. Like, not thank you for what you did. Thank you for those sounds. You go up in the elevator at Rockefeller Center, the Muzak has the Beatles. But they won't play it on a lot of stations in the country now, the new songs. You know, they are a force meeting the power structure head on, because this is the year that they take control, or the youth, the populist people control. And this is 72, and I said this would be the apex, the deciding point in America of how things would happen, and the Beatles are important in that. So what are they doing? They're sitting there, and they're telling a story that's very tragic, but which happened to Oswald, it happened to Sirhan, it happened to Ray, it happened to John Lennon. He moves from one house to another, and somebody takes his binoculars, and they move his things. And he doesn't move everything. He's John Lennon. He has a moving company in France. And they move his things. He's in a new place. And the police make a bust. And they encircle the place like they're enemies of the state. The whole army comes in. Police force. And they go through their possessions. And there's some binoculars there. And they have grass in them. Well, John doesn't say anything because, you know, he thinks, well, maybe they're Paul's or they belong to George. And he's not going to pin the rap on them. It's just grass and their binoculars. The police department comes in, and this is in London, or outside of London. And they say, oh, look, if you sign this paper that you're guilty for this grass, you know, like there's a certain fine. Well, at this point, he was living with Yoko, and England was angry at him for living with Yoko because he stopped being a commodity like a grapefruit or so many dozen oranges that you sell. And the Beatles were a commodity in England. Britain loved them. They were a market. When Yoko comes in and John says, look, I want to be a human being. I'm John Lennon. I have all this bread. And now I found the woman I love. I love her. And I am a person. I'm not a quadruplet. I'm not a Siamese twin. I'm John, and I love Yoko. And they were living together, and she's Japanese. And then the papers in England say, get that ugly Jap out of town. And he says, this is what they actually publish in the papers. She's breaking up our Beatles. Get that woman. They referred her in those terms, in her racial slurs, and the way they were living, and they referred to them in the ugliest language they could do, still do, in the press, because they took our Beatles. She took our Beatles.
So they're using, the United States is using that drug bust, the marijuana bust, for a reason to deport John and
exactly,
Yoko.
And they work with Heath and Nixon are one. They say England's a 59th state. So what happens is they say sign a paper and maybe pays a fine. I forget the details, $1,000 something, say it was your grass. That's all it is. Yoko can stay in this country. She won't be deported. Fine. So he signs a paper that the grass and the binoculars was his, because why should he get George in trouble, whoever it was? Somebody moved it. They're not even his binoculars. He doesn't know what they're there for, but he's there. If it's only $1,000 and Yoko isn't deported, it's only grass. He says, yeah. So then Yoko is American. She's Japanese, but she's married to an American man. Her child was born in America, so they knew someday she'd wander back to America. So when it comes to America, they say, no, she can come back, but you can't. Come into America. You have grass. And that's where they clamp the law. You were busted on grass.
What's the status of that now?
Well, they have appealed to everybody. Now, I thought when I read that they were here, and I wondered how many Beatle fans would actually write to the State Department and say, will you please respect them as artists and human beings and forget that grass law that almost everyone in Washington is smoking the stuff, you know they are, and quit the hypocrisy and let John Lennon in this country. I wish now that people listening to this show would just make a note, get a pencil or write down, and write the State Department or Cranston, not Talcott. He doesn't want that kind of thing in this country. You know where his head's at, but write to Cranston or Tunney or the State Department or McGovern or somebody and say, please let the Lennon stay in this country. If you have a Beatle album and you've listened to their music and they've given you something, why can't you out there give them something? That's what people should be doing in this world. This is what they're not doing. They let even the people they like down. You know, you have two problems here. You have your enemy, which is a spy government like the Central Intelligence Agency that controls so much of what happens and plants evidence in the Justice Department. Then the other enemy is yourself, your own lazy selves. You don't stick by your friends. There's no loyalty. That's the other enemy, is your own selves. You turn down the people that give you music, and the result is you're getting bad music these days, and it's going to get worse, and you don't stick by your loyal friend. so people could write in to the State Department and say, help these people. So now they say, well, she can stay because her child's here, but he has to go. So then he had another experience where he's in London and he's doing his thing and he receives a letter from a psychiatrist. And a psychiatrist has a new theory of how to handle relationships, and he's supposed to be a good psychiatrist. And he's in Los Angeles at the time. The Lennons were there, and they went to him for 6 months. The whole time that they were in therapy, the man helped John. He didn't help Yoko because he believes in separation of the races. He doesn't believe that blacks should marry white or white should marry Japanese or Mexican-American. And he hated Yoko. He told, John to divorce her. He tried to break up the marriage and get her out and away from him, and he hates women. Well, the man came down on them so hard, and Yoko was very depressed and hurt because, they left England, and they finally found somebody for each of them that they loved very much. And this man tried, to break her from him, which could be part of a whole conspiracy thing again, which they have to go into, which I would go into, and which I would like to help them, with my research as a friend, just as a human being. Who's doing these things to them, trying to do these things? Because, see, I don't think they just happen. I know the Manson thing and the Sharon Tate thing was to come down on the hippies, and they used Helter Skelter and tried to get the Lennons into that. And it is a serious thing to see. They represent a lot of things, just like the Tex Watson killing. Tex Watson killed everyone in the Sharon Tate home. And this white Christian boy, not the little Charlie Manson, the ex-prisoner, the great lover, and the violent hippie, but the non-hippie, Charles Watson, did all the massacres, and he leaves death to the pigs on the door with Sharon Tate's blood and wants you to think the Panthers did it. And later in the testimony, they admitted leaving part of LaBianca. Those were two people that were killed the next night after the Tate massacre, leaving their credit cards in the black part of town, hoping people would get mad at the blacks and think they killed the white Mr. and Mrs. Whitey watching their television, Middle America, that the blacks did that. Well, if they admit they planted that, they planted the Helter Skelter, too, the whole thing. The Helter Skelter was part of it to come down. If the whole massacre was to come down on the hippies, they could come down on the Beatles, too. And they tried to bring him there for the trial and get into another scene, which he wouldn't answer. So it's a different scene now in 72 than it was in 66 or 67 when Sgt. Pepper, that Far Out album was out, and those were the days, I look back and we were, I was doing my work then and telling everybody, look, do your music, but listen to what I'm saying too. Every hippie I picked up, everyone that came to my house, everyone I've known, and writers and professional people, and I'd say there's something else too. I could go to Monterey Pop and take all the kids and get tickets for every concert and appreciate those artists, musicians, as musicians and the changes in our society, but for every change there's a price. You don't break it easy.
Speaking of changes, for those of you out there who were expecting us to get to the realist, have faith, some time today, this afternoon, we will get back to the realist and the articles there.
He's itchy to get to the realist.
Well, there's about 3 hours worth of material in there. About 25, 3 hours of reading, maybe.
Oh,
reading. By me.
No,
I'm not to belittle the thing there, but there's a lot there. I should.
You insult me if you say 3 hours. My son.
I don't mean 3 hours worth of research.
No. My son Marvin was going to read the article. He hadn't read the one on Martha Mitchell yet, and he said this morning he was to stay home this morning and take about 3 hours. He wanted to read the realist. I said, look, if you read this realist, if you read the Martha Mitchell in 3 hours, you haven't understood it. Because there's not 3 hours of reading. You better take a little longer.
So we decided we're going to have to break in a minute to identify the station in just a second, but we can't do it yet because it's not time. But in the meantime, I wanted to mention one other thing, that Paul put one of his articles on the cover next to yours. There were two cover stories. The cover story written by May is Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped? And next to it, Paul put his article, and the headline on that one is Will Revolution Spoil Groucho Marx?
You like that
I think
one.
Both of them were written in different veins. But then there's a caricature of Groucho Marx
sitting on a bomb.
Also, Paul indicates in this issue, which we've decided now is mainly by subscription, but possibly there'll be some newsstand copies in this area, right?
Yeah.
Paul mentions that this is another pre-anniversary issue, that he's been trying to get out the 10th anniversary issue since 1968.
I know.
And he has a whole list of editorial promises, which readers have caught him in. Every issue, he promises that this will be the 10th anniversary issue. In fact, he even says at the end of his little comments on that, that he could have made this the 13th anniversary issue, but he's going to wait until the 14th year to do that.
He says that would be ridiculous. I know, I felt very guilty because I thought I was putting off his 13th anniversary issue by linking, you know, Richard Nixon to the Charles Manson murder. But that when you begin to make those kind of statements, you've got to do a lot of research. So the 13th anniversary issue is going to come out goodness knows when, you know.
Now, by the way, for those who are wondering how much it costs to subscribe to The Realist, it's only $3 a year by itself.
Oh, yeah.
And that's because it's published by a nonprofit corporation that doesn't make any profit off of it. Just
Paul makes no money at all. Get it for $3, and then when the conspiracy newsletter comes out, that's $5. The reason mine is more than his is that he's paying me for the articles. You know, he makes me feel like a heel, like I'm making the profit, and he isn't.
Okay, I'll have faith. We will get back to the Realist and discuss some of the articles in there in just a minute while we break and identify the program and station.
Be right back.